You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 16th of May. A Dante Exum Howell Neto deep dive on their season and what's to come. Decision making and out of control general managers. Plus, a look at the lottery and game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing really well. We continue to roll through. I will be off next week, so I'll take a week off next week. I'm going to go on a trip with my son, so we will not have shows next week unless some major breaking news happens, and then I'll find a way to piece one together. But I can't imagine that there'll be breaking news in any way, shape, or form. Today's show is brought to you by The Store and by Mazuma. I think I told you this already, but this is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look behind the curtains. And I'm David Locke, Utah Jazz NBA insider, radio voice of the Utah Jazz. All right, let's get right to it with Dante. Season review, cleaning the glass stuff. We've talked about Dante this week and how I was on with Tony Parks on 1280 The Zone and just simply made the comment that if I was in the front office, every single time I got asked about Dante or the conversation pointed to Dante this offseason, I really believe that I would claim gastric distress, wife needing something, kids needing something, and I would get out of the room as much as I possibly could because I don't know at all what to do with a player with this limited time and this limited experience. You know, he's played 162 games over four seasons, so he's played two seasons now. The first one, his numbers were, frankly, historically bad, but he was just not in a position to do anything. He was basically there because of Trey Burke. The second one, the first half of the season, he missed. The second one, the next one, first half of the season's all ACL recovery, and then the shoulder this year. So injuries have seemingly prevented it, and to know what he is or who he is. He went through some dramatic changes this year, and that's what even makes it more difficult. So he took, and actually the last two seasons he has played, he's taken 43% of his shots at the rim. The change he made this last year is he stopped kind of shooting any of the threes. He went from taking 41% of his shots as threes to just 20% of his shots and threes in just the 14 games he played. The other areas, he started making shots at the rim. So he went from 55% last year to 68% at the rim. And so he didn't actually, it felt like he increased his rim shots a great deal. What he really increased was his 3-10 footers, which he makes right at league average at 38%. So there was a lot more driving to the rim, not quite getting there. And then shooting, he actually got to shot at the rim about the same, but when he got to the rim, he finished far better than he ever has. His career three-point shooting is 132 of 431, so he's a 31%. The magic number is 750 to really know what you have as a shooter. I think you can be fair to guess, but by the time he gets to 750, he will be below average. His corner three shooting, which was really a problem 2 years ago, he shot 25% on corner threes. Last year, in a very few attempts, he shot 29%. So again, hard to tell. Looking over and cleaning the glass, there's some really interesting things about how dramatically he changed year to year. So his first year, he never shot. His usage rate was in the 12th percentile. His second year of playing, so after the ACL, his usage rate was in the 40th percentile. This last year, he started shooting at a tremendous rate. His usage rate was in the 78th percentile. He used nearly 26% of all possessions when he was on the floor. Okay, so that's a really big change. I don't know if that's a good change or not, but that's a considerable change to who he became as a player. His points per scoring attempt also went from the 10th percentile to the 45th percentile to the 77th. So, well, if you're going to be in the 77th percentile, then maybe it's okay. he also assisted on a great deal more. He used to be kind of just out there on the percent assist percentage, which is the percentage of his teammates made shots did the player assist on. He was at 29th percentile, 17th percentile. Now he's up to 78th percentile. So it's an interesting thing. He just, now when he's in the game, he's impacting it dramatically, which if he was doing this as a rookie, you'd be like, great, because it's all these signs that he can adjust things. And maybe he is a rookie, right? Maybe that's actually how you have to try to look at his 17, 18 stats, is those 14 games as a rookie. Like, maybe this is finally him getting a body mature enough at 22 years old, enough experience, having played just almost none. If you recall, Dante's backstory is that he played in Australia in the high school leagues, which can't be particularly good. And then he goes ahead and instead of coming to the U.S. for college, his agent, Rob Pelinka, who's now with the Lakers, suddenly realizes this kid's is hot. We'll just train him for a year. So he doesn't play for the entire 13-14 year. He then comes to the pros. So 14-15, he hasn't played for a year. He's only played high school. And frankly, for all of the love affair of Dante's international play, if you go back and look at Dante's international play, and I get very nervous. You know, it's an interesting thing, the international play on these guys is, it's like international play is this, like it's this hidden gem, right? And so everyone kind of wants to talk about it. And yet I think there's some really serious flaws. And I think some of the biggest mistakes people make is when they analyze players off this international play. And my theory on that is, fine, so Dante was unbelievable in the U18 national championships. How many NBA players did he play? Right? That's like, I want to know how many NBA players did he play. So in the U18 and U19 national championships, Dante averaged 18 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. In the U17s, he averaged 17 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists. But let's go dig into it. When he goes up against Marcus Smart, he kind of sprains his ankle, taps out, and barely plays in that game. And it certainly looked to me as though they almost protected him that whole time. And so then when he's beating up on Lithuania and having these unbelievable tournaments, is what do we know about that? And I'm not trying to be critical of Dante. I'm much more critical about these international numbers. But at times we look at these and I think we decide that this is our sign. So if you look back at Dante's U19 national championship, so he goes against Lithuania. He scores 28 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He's great. He goes 8 of 11 from 2, 2 of 10 from 3, and 46% from the free throw line. He beats up, but like, if we go back and look at that box score, have you ever heard of Gustavus, Tumulus, Ranupis, Gintinavis? I'm mispronouncing all of them. None of these players that played for Lithuania are NBA players. Dante played 44 minutes. Australia loses the game in overtime 106-100. Dante's the best player. But I don't know. This is what makes me nervous. So Dante goes against Serbia, and Australia loses again, 63-58. Jankovic is in that game, and Nikola Jokic plays in this game. So we have an NBA player in Nikola Jokic, who actually wasn't that great. And Dante has another good game. He goes 7 of 19 from field. He goes 4 of 12 from 3. He goes 3 of 7. Excuse me, he goes 4 of 12 from 2, 3 of 7 from 3, 4 of 10 from the free throw line, and he scores 21 points. Against the United States, he played 11 minutes. He tapped out with an injury. He turned it over 4 times when Marcus Smart got into him. Didn't do much. He had 20 against China. He had 20 against Russia. He had 33 against Spain, which is pretty good. But I look through the Spain roster. I don't think there's a guy I've ever seen in the NBA in that game. Hernan Gomez played in that game. So I think it's, you know, like, I think it's a very, very complicated question. Even if you go backwards on Dante and try to figure out who he was then and what type of player he was. I mean, he had 33 in this game. He goes 12 of 13 from the line, 3 of 9 from 3. He has 5 points, 4 rebounds. He does turn it over 5 times. He has 4 steals. And as I've said it time and time again, there's nothing about Dante that makes me ever doubt why he was drafted fifth in the NBA, particularly when you look at that draft. The next picks are Marcus Smart and Nick Stauskas, and I have to go back through the rest of them, but Julius Randle, maybe. They all make a tremendous... So the next picks are Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, Nick Stauskas, Noah Vonleh, Elfrid Payton, Doug McDermott, Dario Saric, Zach LaVine, TJ Warren, Adrian Payne, Nurkic, James Young, Tyler Ennis. Like, okay, I got no problem with that pick. Gary Harris is a pretty darn good player at 19, but like the fifth, it makes total sense. There's nothing, but now moving forward and trying to backwards evaluate who he really was, now trying to figure out who he is, his numbers to some extent this year are so dramatically different in just 14 games. I just don't have the slightest clue at all. His shooting went to the 62nd percentile, up from 43rd overall, but his three-point shooting is in the 18th percentile, and he doesn't take them. His free throw shooting has jumped a great deal. He's gone from 62 to 81, which is great. There are definitely signs of improvement, but then on the other end, let's ask the next question. What position is he, and what's the skill set you have to have? Is he a... He's in the 6th percentile in his 14 games of taking threes that aren't corner threes. So in other words, he doesn't take them. Can you have a 1 or a 2? I think he's probably a 2. That is a non-shooting 2. Does that exist in this league? He's in the 14th percentile of taking threes. Only 19% of his shots. I really honestly don't know the answer on this. He gets to the rim at an elite level. He's in the 98th percentile of the percentage of his shots that are at the rim. But that's also because he's not shooting those other ones. Now, worth noting, he's only in the 42nd percentile in finishing at the rim. He's in the last percentile of long-range twos. And he's in the 18th percentile of making these shots. His steal rate's way up. His rebounding is kind of consistently below average for his position. And that's who he is. It's interesting, right? Really, really interesting. And I think actually there's a longer conversation that needs to be had here on a Dante end of things about, and we'll do it in the next segment. I had something else planned. We'll push it aside again. On what do we want out of that position? Like, what do we really want out of these two positions? And to me, that might be the singular most interesting discussion to be had. Today's show is brought to you by The Score at 6200 South and 20th East. Every week, this is what I love about The Store. So The Store is a grocery store, but as when I went with a friend of mine this year and she and I walked in, her immediate reaction was like, wow, this just feels like local and your community store, and this is great. And she came back later that day. And the reason is, you know, every week they're adding new local places. So this week you can check out Utah's own section. They have on aisle one, they have a Utah own section. So that has Publix and Douglas coffee roasters. It has Hollow Tree Honey. It has Park City Cakes. And now it has Big Daddy Hill's barbecue sauce, Utah's own local product of the week. They've discounted them as well to $5.99, so that's great. You can also find Pop's Pickles and local kombucha and all sorts of really fun things. Now, can we talk June pie? The store is the only place in Salt Lake City that's getting June pies. June pies, a woman out of Heber who makes these pies. And it's like, there's a flock of Park City people that drive to Heber and go get the June pies. And Scott and Jeff found out about it, so they brought it now, have a delivery coming. Two things. Pies are delivered throughout the week, but dinner pies and quiches are only delivered on Friday mornings. And they have a pork tomatillo pie that is amazing. Dessert pies, we had the chocolate mint pie, and we had the strawberry pie over the weekend while my parents were in town for Mother's Day. They were incredible. Absolutely incredible. So check it all out. Plus, Ace Cottonwood Ace is right next door, and they've got the best set of Traeger pellets, Traeger setup and everything. They've actually discounted special pricing on 20-pound bags of Traeger pellets. It's The Store, 6200 South, 20th East. And don't forget the Mudslide Cookie. Mudslide cookies every day. All right, this wasn't kind of, well, it was on my discussion But I didn't think I'd be as long-winded on Dante, and I haven't really even gotten into Haul. But this, we all know who Haul is. I don't think there's a big mystery. He's not a starting point guard. He's an awesome teammate. He always seems to make the right play. He's a little too small. He gets hurt, probably because he plays so damn hard. You just kind of love him completely. But in every aspect of Haul, you know, frankly, he's the like a perfect second-round draft pick. It's exactly what the Jazz got him. Ironically, I had some GMs who told me I would like Haul Neto better than Trey Burke, and that turned out to be true. He got his three-point shooting back this year at 40%, which is probably the key to his entire situation. And I think he's probably the perfect third guard, and when he had to suddenly play a ton of minutes in the playoffs, it felt as though that probably wasn't a great spot for him. Okay? You know, he busted his... The best part about Haul is he's a perfect teammate. He's going to give you everything he has. And so if you can bring him back, you do. Now, what do we want from this position? So assuming Ricky Rubio is your starting point guard, which I think is an assumption that's correct, and Dante and Donovan Mitchell is your scoring guard, who I do think we should be really looking at kind of in the ilk of an Allen Iverson, who Allen Iverson, you know, was taking 18 to 20 shots a game, and I think hopefully he'll be more efficient than Iverson, but Iverson was pretty awesome. I think people are forgetting how great he was. And led the league in scoring in his third season at 27 points a game, and, you know, partially because he played unbelievable minutes and then went to 28 and 31. This is a Hall of Famer, took his team to the finals. But if you look at those teams, they had Eric Snow as their version of Ricky Rubio, and then what do you do with your backup, your third and fourth guards? Are you looking for, like, our backup point guard, is our backup point guard actually Donovan Mitchell? Like, are we planning to play a certain amount of minutes every game with Donovan Mitchell as your ball handler who brings it up? Are you trying to keep him away from that? I think there has to be an entire evaluation of what we want to, what the Jazz want to do with that position. In regards to Dante Exum, like maybe you're playing this incredible speed off game to Donovan, or frankly, on the other end, maybe you've got to make sure you've got somebody who can really shoot it next to Donovan, right? Like if suddenly the two guards that are playing all the minutes with Donovan Mitchell are Ricky Rubio and Dante Exum, and you have two of the worst shooters statistically in NBA history as your two guys that are playing next to Donovan, maybe that's not a very good idea. And so maybe you actually need to have somebody who can really stroke it. It's hard to look back and try to figure out. You know, Allen Iverson played with Eric Snow as kind of the guard who started a bunch of games next to him at certain points in his career, and he was a bad shooting one, but he could defend and do some other things of that sort. They had Aaron McKee, who was another bad shooting physical ass kicker that kind of could protect how the smaller aspect. It was also a different game, right? In that day and age, the 76ers, Allen Iverson teams took 13% of their shots as threes and were 25th in the league in doing that. It's very hard to find that comp, but I really think the big picture you have to back up and say, let's assume for a second that Rubio and Mitchell are your two guards, and they're both playing 30-plus a night, so you're trying to figure out what are you doing with the other 35 minutes of guard play. Is Royce O'Neal part of that, or is he just backing up Joe Ingles? Joe Ingles is kind of playing your point guard some of it. I mean, Quinn's done such a brilliant job of interchanging all these positions. It's very, very hard to be able to go piece in how you're playing it. But I do think the piece here is you are in all likelihood playing with Rudy Gobert rolling. You're in all likelihood playing with an inexperienced backup center, assuming Derek gets an offer and goes somewhere. So what do you want around Donovan? Both predominantly, really in the minutes where Donovan's not playing with Ricky Rubio. Or what do you want in the minutes where Donovan's not playing? Those are the two things I think you're looking at in this position. For the 14 minutes a night where your primary scorer is off the floor, then Royce O'Neal's lacking a little bit, right? He's awesome, but that's not when he's good. Is Dante, with his increased usage rate, what you suddenly want, that he's just going to go take it to the basket and try to create opportunities for everybody in those 14 minutes? But do you want Dante on the floor for the other time when Ricky Rubio's off and it's just Donovan? Like, it's so if you think of Rubio, Donovan is primary group. Rubio's X is secondary group. Donovan X is the other secondary group. What do you want out of that player? And I think that's one of the most interesting offseason decisions by the Utah Jazz is, what are we looking at there? Part of my instinct is just a knockdown shooter. Can we just get Donovan to handle, find a good defensive knockdown shooter who really can stroke it, that suddenly, you know, teams can't leave and lets Donovan play on a more open floor? Do we play, I mean, I'm stretching this even further, but are there times of the series of when we're going to try to play five out, where maybe our backup center stretches the floor a little bit and let Donovan really go to work? I don't know the answer on all these things, but I think it's a really interesting conversation. Is your backup point guard, can you get Darren Collison's been pretty damn good in Indiana, has proven he's playing, and as he crosses over 30 years old, even though he's small, is he suddenly someone you can go get? And I mean, the guy just shoots the lights out every single year and probably isn't great as a starter, but he's the number one 3-point shooter in the league. That's why I thought of him. Or do you have somebody like Reggie Bullock, who is the number 2 3-point shooter in the league, who doesn't have a lot of ball handling skills? He's kind of big and long and he can just stroke it and you just play him, right? He's 6'7", plays a little 2, plays a little 3. He's not great, but he played 28 minutes last year for Detroit, started 50 games in their system and can really shoot it. So it's an interesting debate to me, as much on what you do about Dante Exum as what the Utah Jazz want to do with this position. To me, that's fascinating. And can you go find somebody to play off that? Maybe it is Royce O'Neal. Maybe he's perfect. And maybe your backup to Joe Ingles becomes somebody like a Doug McDermott, who I believe is available and can really stroke it. Or Brooklyn's Joe Harris, who kind of proved himself to be an interesting player in this last year, at 6'6", getting a lot of time, 25 minutes a night, and shot 42% from three. I have to look at all their contract status and look at deals and figure out, you know, what those teams want. And I think everyone's available in the league right now, frankly. So I personally think that the Jazz actually need to find somebody to play next to Donovan who can really shoot. I'm not sure that I like the idea of Donovan playing 36 minutes a night, most of them with a non-shooting rolling big, and most of them with a non-shooting guard next to him. I think that's, if I'm just looking at it from Donovan-centric, which maybe is how we got to build this team, I don't love that. I might want to make an evolution there into something else. I also don't love Donovan with the ball. I'll be totally honest about that. I like Donovan attacking. And again, it's why I like to use the Dwayne Wade, though he's small, much smaller, or the Allen Iverson model to compare for Donovan. Because I think he's better if he's not playing with the ball in his hand. I think he's great at it as the shot clock works down and inside of possession, but I'd rather not have him have to be burdened by it, where he's forced to make all the decisions, keep everybody else involved. I think, you know, he had to do that about 35% of the time as a rookie. I think that's a lot. I think that's an awful lot. And so I think that would be, I don't know. I guess I've given my thought here, and then it has huge impact on how you build the rest of your roster. I don't know if Doug McDermott can handle well enough. I don't know if Reggie Bullock can handle well enough. But those are guys that, I haven't really looked at their contract statuses either, so this is much more hypothetical type of players. But those are guys who, when I look at it, if I can put them next to a Joe Ingles and maybe next to a Royce and play Royce O'Neal really as the backup three at that point, then maybe I can go find someone who can really stroke it in that realm. Hard to tell. I'm just doing some work here to actually be accurate. I don't even know where Doug McDermott finished the year. He got traded like 5 different times. He was at OKC and they went in the Cantor deal. And then he got traded again. which should probably worry us all a little bit. Like, why does this guy keep getting traded every single time? And I think he finished the year in Dallas. Isn't that right? But he's also a career, you know, here's a guy who has taken 750 threes, 724, and he shot 40% of them. So he can really stroke it. The part I was going to get into about the decision-making was about some of the risks, how you take risks, and some of the risks we probably have the ability to take with both Rudy and Donovan on our roster, but I'll save that for another day. Today's show is brought to you in part by MazumaUSA.com. Mazuma's pretty cool. So if you, I was actually with a friend the other day telling him about it. So if you have a company that has, if you're kind of a business person, you have 1 to 5 employees, or you've got money coming in from all different spots, keeping your books, taxes are a pain for a bunch of reasons. One, because there's other things you want to do. Two, because you don't have so much money that you can go just hire your own bookkeeper or hire your own CPA. And if you do, it's taking a chunk of your revenue that's absurd. So this is where Mazuma USA comes in. For $75 a month, you get all your bookkeeping and all unlimited consultation from a CPA and unlimited consultation from a bookkeeper taken care of. They sit down with you, get your information, get access to your information, and they immediately have a report for you. Then every month you get a report. Every quarter you get a tax planning call. And the end of the year, you have all of your stuff put together. If you look at it from a Mazuma standpoint, I always like to talk to these companies and learn their business model. It's really interesting. So we're going to hire a bunch of CPAs and bookkeepers, and they're going to work on X amount of clients, and then we'll make money because we're maximizing their usage, and you're going to win because you're not paying full rate. It's $75 a month, but if you use the promo code LOCKED, it's 25% off. No contract, canceled anytime, no hidden fees. It's MazumaUSA.com, 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102. How on a day with no content do I always seem to go long? All right, the lottery was finished yesterday. And, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. This is the system. But this is a big deal in the West. Phoenix and Sacramento both have a pretty good collection of talent. Devin Booker, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, maybe Josh Jackson. They've got decent – I still kind of am in my own world of Dragan Bender being good. And they both may have just picked up stars, like stars. And that's a pretty big deal. Luka Doncic, either going 1 or 2, is a star. You have, and Aeon is a star. So I think that what you're, this is like maybe not game changing today, but I think it's a huge, this is a huge deal. Nothing you can do about it. And maybe it doesn't come and get us, but you know, we just watched what Donovan did for us in the span of a year. And I'm here to tell you that this is a big day that both Sacramento and Phoenix, whose ownership groups have prevented them from winning, there's no question, have just added another layer of talent that's significant. Thoughts on Game 3 of Boston-Cleveland, or Game 2. The guard line of Cleveland is just terrible. So, the George Hill, J.R. Smith defense is a disaster. And Boston just zeroed in on it in the second half. That was the adjustment from their angle. And what they did, what Boston did was to take, just they started running a high pick and roll and going at those guards and then attacking the fact that they have no rim protection. And Cleveland's 28th in the league defensively for a reason, and it shows up all the time. And they just miss on so many possessions. But on this one, they just went after the guards. And I don't think that's going away. And Rodney Hood and Kyle Korver are no better. I cannot believe J.R. Smith gets time over both those guys. I can't believe he gets time over Kyle Korver, frankly. Rodney Hood's just a shadow of the player we're used to seeing, so maybe it's not as stunning on that front. But holy smokes, was Rodney Hood bad. It's sad. It's hard to watch. And the numbers are just glaring. He's missed 11 straight threes. He drives to the basket, has no idea where he's going or what he's doing. It's just bizarre. I mean, some of it can be the systems, but some of it's just a fall. He's 4 of his last 41 from 3 in the playoffs. He's only scored more than one field goal in 2 of his last 11 playoff games, both games where the team lost by 20 points or more. So that he's getting garbage time. So maybe somehow J.R. Smith is actually better than Rodney Hood right now, which I never thought for my life. But there's no way Kyle Korver is. I mean, there's no way. But I'll tell you what, that Boston's really good. And I'm not saying this to criticize G at all. Because Gordon's a bona fide all-star. But Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are legit. Gordon Hayward scored 20 points a game, was a real all-star. Like, nothing. He's going to be their fifth option next year. Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward. Holy smokes, what a group that is. But Gordon's like the fifth option offensively. He moves it. He's not selfish. He'll be fine. This has not got some level of like, oh, he blew it or wrong decision. Or I mean, it's going to be interesting. If they make the finals this year, I don't know what Gordon's addition does for them. I think he gets put in a little bit of a no-win situation where no matter what he does, maybe they're not as good, and then he's the fall guy. Because, boy, do they ever love these kids right now. And they should. But Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were third picks of a draft for a reason. They're great. I mean, I know this is a blasphemous comment in – there's a chance Jason Tatum's the best player of this draft class. Like, and Donovan Mitchell is, I just told you, I think Donovan Mitchell's Dwayne Wade and Allen Iverson. And there's a chance that Jason Tatum's the best player of this draft class. It's crazy. All right, that is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Get all your latest at LockedOnJazz.net and go to LockedOnSports.com. And please sign up for the LockedOnJazz.net newsletter and get the email releases whenever things come out. Thanks very much.